Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Ultra Hope Girls, a Danganronpa podcast. We are diving in with episode 10 of both the Future arc and the Despair arc today. So just be warned that this episode will spoil up through
episode 10, Future and Despair arc.
You heard it here. So don't listen if you haven't watched it.
I mean, yeah.
There we go. No, just kidding.
I think you should leave that one. I like that.
Okay, we'll see. We'll see. Anyway, we hope you all enjoy this episode. It's these two anime episodes were a little dark, a little heavy, but we'll get there. And without further ado, I'm Maddie.
I'm Marin.
And I'm Caroline.
And we're the Ultra Hope Girls.
Welcome to the Danganronpa Podcast.
You're on the threshold of an amazing episode. Showtime.
All right. Hello, everybody, and welcome back. How are you guys doing?
I'm doing pretty well. Thanks.
I'm good. I'm good.
Yeah.
Good to, yeah. Good to hear.
Although my heart is a little crushed after these two episodes.
They're pretty bad. I like watch another episode of Modern Family to like cleanse the palate.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I actually ran my laundry machines while I was watching this to drown out some of the sounds because I just didn't want to hear it. It was so sad.
I know. I mean, honestly, like I'll take this moment to just shout out the voice actors, specifically Bryce Papenbrook and the guy who plays Munakata, I can't remember his name, and then Christine Cabanos. My God, they killed it. It was amazing. Dub actors, they're killer, man. They're getting it done.
And also I want to shout out Junko too.
Yes.
Like, especially absolutely. That scene. I know I'm jumping way ahead, but the Despair arc when she's talking to Juzo and she's just like rapid fire, like switching voices. And I have a note that says like, whoa. So 10 out of 10. Good job, voice actors.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Oh, I meant to. Okay, this is completely unrelated. So we might take this off the record or we might not. Caroline and also Marin. Did you know that Aaron Fitzgerald voices Quark in VLR?
I did know that.
Remind me who Quark is?
The little kid.
Him in forever.
The kid with the helmet in VLR.
Whoa, I did not
That's
know
Aaron
that.
That's Aaron Fitzgerald.
She's so talented.
She is.
She's killer.
Like, she's incredible. My goodness.
Well, I have, first off, I have we have a flashback to the classic dumpster scene, where it all began, if you will, for the Kyoko and Makoto shippers. It probably started earlier than that, but I had a question, and I'm pretty sure that they did, but did they reanimate the scene?
Yes,
they absolutely did. Yeah, because I'm just gonna be honest with you guys, like Makoto in the Trigger Happy Havoc like animation, he looks like such a, I don't know, he looks like so silly looking. He looks silly. And in this version, it's like the remastered Makoto, who literally just physically looks better, like his design is just better. I don't know, he just looks so like a little child in the first one, but yeah, in this one he's a man. But he saw his man look in the dumpster scene, which is why I was like, they reanimated this.
I think in the, I could be remembering it wrong, I'd need to go back and check, but I think in the original anime it was a brighter scene as well. Like, there, I just, it struck me how dark, like lighting wise, everything was in this episode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really true. And just muted colors. And I would honestly say that that's a big time stylistic choice for the Future arc in general.
Yeah.
And I think it's to distinguish it from the Despair arc.
Definitely.
Yeah, absolutely. My first note is right after that, you know, we flash forward back to where Kyoko is lying dead, sad face. We're still sad. But Makoto uses his hand to wipe off the blood on Kyoko's eye. And I looked up, have you guys heard of like the palm lines, like palm readings?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I looked up where the blood was resting on his hand. And I don't know if you guys know more about this than me. So please feel free to jump in. Or listeners, if you hear this and you're like, man, you're wrong, let us know. But it looks like it's on the love line of his hand.
Oh.
Yes, which broke my heart in two. Yeah, because I don't know, a lot of times with reading palms, there are deeper symbologies that I don't personally understand, but about like where if something stops suddenly, that could mean like your love life suddenly ends or changes or, you know, just something like that. And so the fact that it only makes it halfway across, I feel like could be interpreted that it ended too soon, you know, like it was, I know, I just, yeah.
That's so sad, but a very interesting detail.
It is. And it also goes hand in hand with the fact that these two episodes are quite unique in the Danganronpa canon because it canonically confirms one, a romantic relationship between Makoto and Kyoko, and two, a gay character that is absolutely confirmed in the text that they're gay. Like, yeah. Obviously we have implied Teru, implied Nagito, implied a lot of various relationships throughout the games, but this is the first time that a romantic relationship, for the most part, besides I guess Pekko and Fuhiko, and I might be forgetting somebody, but it's like the first time that there is a confirmed romantic relationship between Makoto and Kyoko and a confirmed queer character. That's not heavily implied, it's said in the text that that character is that. So
I don't know if I would go so far as to say that it is like a relationship between Makoto and Kyoko, but definitely like mutual feelings is confirmed, you know,
right.
Does that make sense? Like,
yeah,
like it's not left up to much interpretation.
I think with every anymore. Right, with every episode that goes by, the wording that they're using becomes more and more romantic versus platonic. Like, it's like, I adored her, like, all right, Makoto, warm in my heart.
Caroline heard that, Caroline got jealous because Makoto is supposed to adore only Caroline.
Those really sound like jealous noises. Caroline's making up there.
It just sounds like flatulence to me, so.
Oh, well.
That's what jealousy sounds like.
Why not both?
You heard it here first.
Oh, my. All right, so my next note is about the scene where Munakata is fighting with Makoto and they're like smashing through walls and stuff like that. This scene really reminded me of that one Frozen reprise where Anna and Elsa, Anna's like, come home. And Elsa's like, no, you don't understand. Like, there's one part in particular, Makoto says with the exact same cadence as Anna, we can end this game together versus,
oh my God,
we can go down this mountain together. And I literally was like, I am writing this note down.
He said,
yeah,
Frozen, like, is great.
Yeah, but there's just like ice flying in one, glass flying in the other. So you heard it here first. The future arc is actually just Frozen.
I can see it. I believe it. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
I do have a note actually that happens a little bit before that. Ryota is there's a very interesting scene that happens between Ryota and Makoto where he's like, how can you just like leave Kyoko here? And Makoto is like, I have to, like, she would have died for nothing if he didn't go. And I feel like that shows like a certain maturity level here. And then this is a note I was going to get to a little bit later, but it kind of comes up here. So I feel like Ryota is like a path not traveled by Makoto. Like, if Makoto had not gone through the killing game and had not gone through character development, he probably would have been quite similar to Ryota and felt kind of helpless. Like, if you think about at the beginning of the game, he had mirror qualities to Komaru, where he was like, oh my gosh, these people are so cool and like awesome. Like, I could never compare to them. Like, they're so cool. But now he has really come into his own and we really see that prominently. So it's almost like he's leaving that part of himself behind. And then we have this just quite beautiful, and I'm sure this was done on purpose. I mean, these writers are brilliant. Munakata is like a shadow version of Makoto. And for those of you who may not be familiar with that means, a shadow self is a side of your personality that contains all parts of yourself that you don't admit to having. So like Munakata has very similar qualities to Makoto. They've both lost women who mean a lot to them. They've both fought for hope. and they both want to destroy Hope, but one is doing it in a way that creates a better future for everybody, and the other is doing it in a way from a place of fear and from a place of like, just kill it, get it done, get like kill everybody because this is a disease that can't be stopped. So it's just, yeah, super interesting because I feel like up until this point, we haven't really seen that. I mean, we have the literal shadow self of like Izuru and Hajime, but that's a little bit of a different situation. This is like somebody with this, with similar ideals to you that you can't get, that you fight with because how you're doing them is completely different. It's a very interesting moment in the series. And it's shows a lot of mastery in the writing of this show that I don't think gets enough credit.
Yeah, I really agree with that. And I think that like Munakata is kind of a foil to Makoto in that way. I think you just put it so beautifully, Caroline. but I also have like a very similar note kind of going off of that, because it struck me to, you know, jot this down when Munakata says, "I will eliminate despair from this world, even if I'm the last person left alive." And I'm like, I mean, in any situation, in any world, that is an extreme statement, right? Like he's like, I'm going to save the world from despair, even if it means I'm going to literally kill everyone except for myself. And I think like at this point, it's kind of become clear that his goal originally, you know, was for Hope, but now it's become just so twisted and warped beyond anything heroic that it's like unrecognizable. And he even has the like black eye that's like showing that he's evil, you know. But yeah. And I know that I've said that I don't like him, but I appreciate him as a character, and I think he is a very good antagonist, because I think he's a really good example of a character who like originally was rooting for something good and had like a noble goal, but they got such like tunnel vision focusing on that one goal that they ended up just sacrificing everything else and ended up kind of going down a path that is probably so far from their original goal that it's like not recognizable anymore. I did make like a small literary connection, but this is like really only my like biggest note for this entire episode. I really don't have anything else major until the next, the despair arc. But I will say Munakata reminds me of this quote by Friedrich Nietzsche. The quote is, "He who fights with monsters might take care lest he thereby become a monster. And if you gaze for long into an abyss, the abyss gazes also into you." That quote, I know, has been worded a few different ways. I got this version from Goodreads, so hopefully that's accurate or whatever. But that quote makes me think of Munakata because he's so focused on destroying despair that he literally becomes despair in the process. Yeah, I don't know. I felt like that was a fitting quote.
Yeah. Can I also, I want to add something interesting that you said. It's almost like his hope is selfish, right? It's like, I want to eliminate all the hope from my world, not our world, right? Because if he's the last man that gets to be alive.
Right.
Right. Like, yeah.
Yeah.
I love it.
All right. So this is kind of a tangent. It's related, but it's going to be a little bit of a long explanation. So if we want to cut it, that's totally valid. But there's a whole thing on TikTok where this one creator, and I don't know her username, but she has this theory that in media, there is, for every main character protagonist, they are the Mario of a story. And every Mario has a Luigi, a Wario, and a Waluigi. And they all, like, it's just the vibe between the characters and sometimes the way that they look, but not always, because, you know, not every Luigi has a lookalike Mario, am I right? And so for Makoto being a Mario, I feel like you could say that Nagito is his Luigi, potentially, just because of how similar they are. That one I'm least confident about, but I think that his Waluigi is absolutely Munakata, and his Wario would then be, what's his name? The little sad one.
Ryota.
Thank you. Yes.
the little sad one. We both were like, oh, we know who you're talking about.
You're like, right.
Ryota is like a whisper of Wario. He's not even close. I mean, like, you know what I mean?
Oh yeah.
A whisper of Wario.
Wario.
Yes. But yeah, I honestly really want to do a Patreon episode about that concept.
Yeah.
So, you know what I mean?
That'd be fun.
Let me know if you want to collab on that.
Oh, bestie. Yeah, you know I'm down.
Yay. But yeah.
Something I also want to say is the quote, whatever happens next, promise you won't turn your back on hope, is the Kyoko's new copypasta. She always has one.
True.
Mikuro Saba, the 16th student.
Look out for her.
Watch out for her, classic.
Oh my gosh.
And also something interesting that I observed is the background music in that whole Makoto and Munakata, the scene where they're like verbally like arguing at each other. The background music is the same as the mini game in the trials where you shoot truth bullets.
Oh.
Isn't that interesting?
That's like, so interesting.
Because Makoto is shooting truth bullets in that scene, like literally. And so, yeah, I thought that was really interesting. They brought that back.
Also, the response that Makoto has to one of those many copypasta flashbacks is he says, that's what I do, or something similar to that. And I noticed that in the despair arc, Chiaki says the exact same line at the end. She says, it's what I do, when Isuru says, like, you're still gonna, you know, go for your friends and hang out with them and whatever. And she's like, it's what I do. And so the parallels between these two half episodes were just like, I don't know.
They were significant.
Thick. Yeah.
Yeah.
They were thick.
Which, I have to, yeah. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, sorry. I was just gonna say, like, I feel like the past 9 episodes, I haven't noticed as much of a lineup between the two. It hasn't, this episode to me felt the most connected between the two arcs, which I guess kind of makes sense because we're getting closer to the end. But yeah, what were you gonna say?
No, I was gonna say, because so I have a note about this later, but this seems like a good segue to talk about it. So when Chiaki, you know, when Junko is trying to pick out which student in particular to do what she did to Chiaki, which we'll get into that, all of that, oh my god. But I made a connection here that, like, the reason why Chiaki was a threat to Junko's plan is because she had gone beyond her station as the ultimate gamer. She had become more than what society had told her that she could be. She was an advocate for her friends. She's no longer like sitting in the corner playing video games alone. And there's a huge connection between her and Makoto, I would argue, more than Makoto and Hajime, because Makoto in this scene is rising above his station and what society told him he could be, which is what makes him a significant threat to despair, right? And that's why Junko, I'm sure, thought, okay, like, let's just kill Chiaki, because she could have the hope enough, or distill enough hope in people to make them not fall for this, right? And so,
yes!
Yeah, that's quite powerful.
Audience, absolutely. Maddie and I were snapping throughout that, silently snapping. But that's so true. And Nagito even says, he's like, you've killed the old, like, the ultimate hope, or what did he say? Like, the biggest representation of hope.
Right.
When Makoto is very much alive, right? Like, I mean, I don't know that Nagito necessarily knows of Makoto at this point, or if he's made it to the station of ultimate hope at this point, but this was Nagito's ultimate hope, Chiaki was. And so you're totally right. Like, oh my goodness. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think because it's a prequel and they're a class that's like older than Makoto's class, I don't think Makoto would have been there by this time, but
he would have still looked silly. He would have been in the character design silly. Phase. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, there was like, there's literally, I mean, that's happening at a time when Hope's Peak is literally manufacturing an ultimate hope in Isuru, and you know, clearly we see that doesn't quite go as planned, considering that he contributes to this whole plan. Oh, I love Chiaki. I think I've gained a deeper appreciation for her throughout all of this.
I have to agree with you.
All right, I've got 2 notes in the future arc that are media related, so we'll just group those. But Chiza killing a bunch of kiddos, that was really disturbing. And
yeah,
to be honest, it felt a little bit out of nowhere, like they just threw that in. I mean, I know that it kind of pointed to the fact that Munakata has been blind to the despair, what's been going on, or, you know, it pointed to his relationship with Chiza a little bit. But I just wanted to comment that I think it was last episode I said that this show is actually Star Wars episode 3.
Yes.
And I'd just like to bring that back. Killing some kids. That sounds a whole lot like Star Wars. Anyone? Anakin?
Anyone?
He's still here.
That's just terrible. Not funny. Not the killing of the children, but the fact it mirrors Star Wars. Yeah, that's funny.
And then the other note I have is Chiza and Monica look really familiar. And I mean Monica Doki Doki Literature Club Monica.
Interesting.
You're so right. I never thought about that. You're like, so right.
Even the posturing.
Yeah.
Like weirdly similar.
Which one came first?
Doki Doki really did, question. I'm sure.
Oh yeah. Okay.
I wonder if there was inspiration there.
I'll look up when Doki Doki came out.
Because this was 2017, the anime came out.
Oh yeah. So this came out before the anime came out before Doki Doki did.
Gotcha.
Interesting.
They do look similar. Yeah.
It could just be a coincidence. It's a common, not to be this person, but it's like a common character design. So it could just be like
very
true. I hear what you're saying though.
Yeah. Like I literally gasped when I saw it because I was like, the bangs and it's the hair placement. The hair,
yeah.
It was too much for me. Yeah. too much in a good way. But yeah. I guess I got one more. Why not just keep going, right? So it's a little bit of a question, but a big theme of the future arc episode is ending something does not equal bringing back the other, right? Ending despair does not equal bringing back hope. Yeah. And I just wanted to ask if you guys agreed with that.
I do. I very much do. I think I'm like, not to, you know, sound like a too cliche kind of thing, but I do believe that without despair, there is not hope. And without hope, there is not despair, because I think that like, I was about to say something way more eloquent. That's gone. But I am the kind of person who I'm kind of the belief that like, without pain and suffering in the world, there can be no joy and love. And like, I do believe in the importance of that kind of balance and that dichotomy, because I think that if we didn't have pain or suffering in the world, then our joy would not be meaningful.
Yeah.
That was pretty eloquent there.
Oh, no, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Maddie, I really couldn't have said it better myself. Like, I feel like, what do I feel? I feel, therefore I am. No, I'm sorry. I feel like, yeah, you can't have one without the other. And oftentimes, like, look at how Kyoko sacrificed herself for the sake of hope, but that was despairing that happened. But that small despair means a greater hope. So I think that hope comes from overcoming despair.
Nagito Kamaeda has entered the chat.
I know, I was just gonna say.
Nagito just rolled into the Zoom room. But yeah, but greater hope is built by overcoming despair, because we live in an imperfect world. Therefore, there is constantly and always going to be despair, and some despairing times are going to be greater than others. But at the end of the day, it's like moving on and living and not letting the martyrs die in vain. That is what builds and brings a bigger hope.
So my last note of the future arc episode is, did y'all see the post-credit scene?
No.
You didn't? You didn't see this one either?
We're fake fans.
I was dyeing my hair when I watched it.
I was sad, okay?
Basically the post-credit scene, it's just like, it's literally like 10 seconds or whatever, but there's just a bunch of battleships converging on Jabberwock Island.
Is Byakuya there?
No, I don't know.
Maddie, I feel like that's something you should have found out.
I should have like paused and zoomed in really far to see if I could see who's on the ship.
Yeah, like yes. Go through the boat.
Or like a Google Maps kind of thing, like right. 3D street view.
Like go around the boat, like, oh.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm watching right now do you guys know who the Game Grumps are?
Mm-hmm. I've heard of them.
Okay, they're playing Danganronpa.
Oh,
and I haven't like religiously watched them, but like I've seen some of their videos, but obviously if they're playing Danganronpa, I have to watch it. And so they're in the middle of the first trial of the second game right now. And they call Byakuya, they call him Byakuya every time. And so it's every time it's like Byakuya.
It's like funny. A two syllable
Byakuya. Name. Version. Right, exactly.
Mm, I like Byakuya. It. All right, everyone, we're going to take a quick break. But before we go, do you want to answer one of these many incredible questions we've been coming up with throughout this episode? Leave us a voice message on anchor.fm to let us know your opinion. Or if you want to chat with us about it, become a patron. The lowest tier is just $2 a month, and you get access to a ton of really cool episodes. You can find us on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. We are everywhere. We're Ultra Hope Girls Podcast. We would love, love, love to hear from you. And we will be right back after this.
Hello, everybody. Caroline here with a pretty exciting announcement. So I, separate from the other Ultra Hope Girls, am offering some online virtual classes in things such as writing, because, you know, I'm the ultimate literary girl, and performing, and also some clubs and classes virtually via my own school, which I founded, called the Spilling Ink School. You can check that out at thespillinginkschool.com. I'm offering tutoring in college essays. I'm offering, you know, piano classes and all that jazz. So definitely check it out. It's a good time. And I will also be offering some clubs and classes that are Danganronpa related via OutSchool. So I'll keep the links all in the description. They are for people under 18, so ask your parents before checking it out. But yeah, I'm excited to potentially have some listeners in my classes, and I wanted to let you know that that's going on. So thanks so much in advance for checking it out, and I look forward to teaching some of you.
All right, on to despair.
Despair.
Mm. Despair, am I right, guys?
I miss Dat Bear. Where is Dat Bear?
He's or here. Those bears. Or these bears.
These nuts. Nuts!
Oh my god. Wait, guys, I have a note that I forgot I took, which is, it says, Arthur has Excalibur, Makoto has fire extinguisher. As his weapon of choice. Okay. All right, let's get into just some despair.
Let's do it.
Into some despair. So my first note is about Jusso and the revelation that he is gay for Munakata, which I wanted to ask you guys, like, what your thoughts were on that, what your reaction was to that, because I have to be honest, I am, like, I have mixed feelings. I'm, like, split 50-50 in terms of whether I like this plot point or whether I don't like it, because on the one hand, part of me feels like, oh, this is really progressive of this anime to have, like, a canonically gay character and have this as a plot point. But the other part of me is a little bit frustrated that, like, the one canonically gay character in this show is, like, arguably not a good person. You know, he does some really bad things. Like, he, like, beats up Makoto. Oh, wait, no, it's not Makoto. It's Hajime. He, like, beats up Hajime in that one episode and is, like, awful. And he's, like, really, like, angry and violent. And I don't know, in one way, that's, like, oh, overcoming the stereotypes of what a gay man is, because look at how manly he is. But at the other hand, I'm like, he's not a good person. He's not likable, whatever. And he's, like, the one canonically gay character that I'm just like, why does it have to be this way? So I'm like, I'm split solidly 50-50 mixed feelings. I'm curious to hear what you guys think.
Okay. So I think when looking at representation for queer people in media, you know, I would rather have a character who is incredibly interesting and does questionable things that is queer, rather than somebody who's so boring that they're not an important part of the story, right? So if I, like, and that's just, I'm speaking as, like, a queer woman, like, cis woman, that is how, where I stand personally, but this is obviously, like, not to speak for all people. Yeah, I feel like he has a very important role in the story, and a lot of people in the story do a lot of morally questionable things already. And so I would honestly argue that he is just like everybody else. And I think that that is hammering that point home, is the fact that he does a lot of these morally questionable things, and he happens to be gay and is still doing those morally questionable things. Like, you know, a lot of straight women will say, oh my gosh, like, I wish I could just be a lesbian, because, like, I wouldn't have to deal with men and, like, them being silly and, like, you know, like, cheating on me or, like, whatever. And I, like, I just say that to them, I'm like, it happens to gay people just as much. You know what I mean? Like, it's not like you're gay and suddenly there's no problems or there's no cheating or there's none of these, like, transgressions. Gay people are just like everybody else. So that's
what?
I know, crazy. So it just kind of, like, I don't know, I didn't mind it too much, and it okay. it did surprise me, because we have not had any at all confirmation ever about any character being gay, but we've had hints to it, so I was not ever expecting it to go in that direction. just based on the history of Danganronpa in general, I didn't expect it to go in that direction.
That is a very good point, Caroline, actually. I think that's like really valid. The fact that like everyone is problematic in some way, everyone does morally questionable things. There's no like one, except maybe Makoto, there's no like one person who's like just like above everyone else. I don't know. But yeah, I do appreciate the complexity of his character and the humanness of his character. Yeah. So that's a very good point. I was a little conflicted.
I feel like I'm also a little bit conflicted, but I liked it. I was a little bit worried that if the Danganronpa franchise decided to make someone canonically gay, that it would just be like like, fine, we did it, you know? Or like, you know, people have been asking for it for a long time, but I feel like what I've seen in media in representation is if someone is gay, it is their entire personality. You know, like they just,
that's really true.
They're just looking for a relationship, or they're just, you know, like wanting to do romantic things all the time. And that was a concern of mine, but I think because it was such a shock that it wasn't Chisa, they really handled it well. You know what I mean? Like, because that was kind of a twist, I thought that it actually was handled pretty well. My only conflict is kind of what you were saying, Maddie. Yeah, and like the reaction that we already see Munakata have to his friend trying to come out to him from the episode 2 prior, like that was like, really? We're going to take the one person and we're going to do that?
Just immediately murder. That's a good point as well, though, Marin, for sure.
I also have to say, I mean, like in Japan, being gay means a very different thing than in America. Yeah, just things to think about.
For sure.
Marin, I wanted to respond to your thing a little bit. I think that's a really good point, because I have seen like a bit of a trend in anime, especially older animes, of like the gay characters tend to be pretty badly stereotyped, and like there's maybe a very flamboyant man or something, and that's like the only representation at all. So yeah, I think in a lot of ways this is very progressive of them to, you know, write this character like this, for sure.
Have you guys seen Schitt's Creek?
I've seen a little bit of it.
You're currently watching it, Caroline, right?
Yeah, yes. And it's so funny you say that. Is this one you'll keep in?
It's a spoiler for the for Schitt's Creek. So I was going to say, if you guys want to like unplug your headsets, or
I think I already know what you're going to say.
Okay. It's interesting talking about that, because one of the reasons that Schitt's Creek has become so popular, and this was said in one of their after filming, it was like a 1 hour episode of like, we're done, like let's reflect kind of things. But one of the things that people love about the show is one of the characters, I believe, is pansexual. I think he's pan. And he and his future partner, the show is not about that. Their relationship, while being endearing and, you know, just like goals, like they're so cute together, it's not about that. The show just moves by it. And that's one of the first shows that has been so successful and long running that has accomplished that, where being gay and being in a relationship, it doesn't need to be focused on. It can just be, and like people have lives outside of that. It's like, anyway, so that's what that kind of reminded me of.
I was just gonna say, and there's only one episode in Schitt's Creek that they even focus on coming out as a theme. I am so tired. I'm sorry. I know that it's a valid story. We have so many movies and television shows that focus on the coming out of a gay character, and that's their whole entire arc. And I'm like, please just, okay, that's definitely very much a part of the queer experience, but like, give me more than just that. Like, give me like a fully fleshed out character with hopes and dreams. Like, yeah. Please.
I don't know. Have both of you watched The Haunting of Hill House? Caroline, I don't know if you have. No. Do you care if I spoil?
I don't think we'll never watch that.
Okay. Yeah, it's terrifying, but it's so good. I like Haunting of Hill House. To me, this is another little bit of a tangent, so maybe it gets cut. But Haunting of Hill House to me is a show that is like, I really like how they do it in that show with like the gay character, because Theo is one of the sisters and she is gay, and like she is in a relationship with a woman, but that's not like her whole arc. Like that's just one part of her. And there's like a very comedic moment of one time of like the siblings finding out that she's gay, and like it's very comedic the way that that is found out. But it's not like she is the object of the joke. The object of the joke is more so that like her siblings didn't know that she was gay. Like I love the way that they did it, and yeah. Also, Haunting of Bly Manor.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I did tell Caroline about that show. I spoiled it through because we started watching an episode and it was not going well. So
it's creepy.
Yeah.
But I just have a tough time.
Yeah. But also with Theo, the scenes that are sexual are literally to show the audience more about her like power. Like her.
Yeah.
Like it has a purpose. It's anyways.
I love some good gay representation.
My next note is about Mekon.
Oh, me too.
A short little thing, but in this scene where everyone's like all those students of the class, oh gosh, I don't remember what class.
Our
friends.
Yes.
Yes. When they're like walking down the hallway or whatever, and then all of a sudden they're like, Mekon like runs and catches up with them, and they're all like, wait, where did Chiaki go? And Mekon is literally just like, oh, she twisted her ankle, so like I left her behind. She'll catch up with us eventually. And like everyone's just fine with that. Like, I was so confused.
You know,
like, wait, what?
I hated that. I really did.
I did. And they call Mekon the super high school level health committee member, which is very different than nurse.
Yeah,
I would say.
I don't know what that's about.
Yeah, my only explanation for that is maybe they have like a bunch of different class positions, like class leader, and then
right.
They were like, let's have a health officer, which means like who would that be in like the 78th class, you know, or like the 74th class? Maybe it's just like, I don't know, the ultimate skier is the health person.
The health committee member of the 78th class would be Sakura.
Oh yeah, could
that's
be.
She knows a lot about the body. Oh, and I have the Schitt's Creek note. I was going to say is Nekomar has a quote where he says, we'd totally be up Schitt Creek.
Yes.
And I thought of Schitt's Creek. I was like,
wait,
silly.
Does he?
Yeah, he does.
Mm-hmm. He doesn't. I don't think he says that in the subtitled version.
Oh, yeah. So that was the dub to clarify.
That's incredible.
But yes, correct me up.
My next note is kind of a really big one, like a big chunk. And it's about the whole brainwashing thing. Are we ready to kind of get into that?
I'm ready.
Sure.
Okay. So this is the episode where I feel like people start to have a big problem with the anime. You know, we've talked to a lot of people who really hate the anime. And I think this is part of the reason. In the second game, the big twist is that everyone was evil, right? And so it's like, oh, like, should we be saving these people who are despair? And here they've clearly shown that everyone was not, in fact, evil. So it kind of takes away a little bit from the second game. But I have to add, like, have you ever played a game where the third installment of the game took back the second game twist? Like, I don't know. I just thought that was kind of a nod to the creators. I've never experienced that where the third game, they're like, ha ha ha, nope. Like, just when you think you understand.
I don't think it negates the second game twist. I actually think it makes it more me root for the characters more that they get out of this prison. Like at the end of the second game, you know, everyone's dead except for the survivors. And so it's like very much despair inducing to then see how they fell into despair and then know, oh my God, like they're all dead and they never got a second chance at to be themselves. Right. Because we know that their high school versions of themselves are the characters we see in the game. So now we're just filling in the gap of like how they became despair. So I don't know if I agree with you, honestly.
Yeah,
I don't think it
fair.
Takes back the twist. I think it just gives us more information about the twist. Yeah, that's just my opinion though.
No, that's fair.
I partially agree with you, Marin. And I think I also partially agree with Caroline. I do think it doesn't necessarily negate everything from the second game. I think it just provides a little more explanation for it. But I also think that it makes us feel a little differently about the characters. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. I agree with Caroline in that it makes us root for the characters more because we feel like, you know, we grow to love them in the second game and then we're shocked when we find out how evil they are. And then this series kind of lets us come full circle back to being like, oh, like I still love these characters. Like maybe this really wasn't their fault, that kind of thing. And I do think there is some of that that makes me like love the characters more. But I also love what they did in the second game to make you feel conflicted about whether you should root for those characters. You know, like I really like it when a piece of fiction can do that to me and make me like really root for a character and then find something out about them that really makes it hard for me to know how to feel about them. And then I think this comes around and changes that to almost kind of make it easy for us again. Like it kind of lets us off the hook and lets us be like, oh, it's fine. Like they're actually good people. We can root for them. That's fine. And for some people, maybe that is like a very comforting thing, but I almost am a little bit like, I almost miss the challenge of being made to feel a little uncomfortable with like, oh gosh, like are these characters I know and love like actually like monsters, like whatever. That complexity to me was like part of what I loved about the second game. And I do feel like a little bit of that gets lost because of this.
I do want to add something that I just forgot. Oh, it made me also think of like, okay, you know, these people were brainwashed, but they did terrible things. So then do they have to take responsibility for the terrible things that they did? Or like, yeah, like who is responsible?
Because who's, you know what I mean? Blame?
Seriously, because
60-40 on the kids.
Yes, no, 60-40 on the kids. No, but like seriously, because like, yeah, Maddie, like I hear what you're saying, but I also was like, but they still did those terrible things. They still did them.
It's true.
Even though they were in their despairing form. So
yeah, I just think it makes it easier for us to write off everything that they did as like totally not their fault. You know what I mean?
Right.
But maybe we shouldn't. Maybe we shouldn't write it off because of that.
It kind of reminds me of actually in Ultra Despair Girls when, you know, these kids are doing horrible things, terrible things. And then we learn their backstory, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a little bit of a, well, here's the reason. You know what I mean? And so like, I agree with both of you. I really do. Because Caroline, to your point, I think that by giving this explanation, they actually clear up a plot hole in SDR2, which is if these kids were truly ultimate despair reincarnate within themselves, why would Junko be so opposed to letting them out of this game? Right. Wouldn't she have not needed to take over their bodies and minds because she already had? Right. So like that, I feel like is a plot hole that this solved. So Caroline, I absolutely agree with you, but Maddie, I also agree with you because in Ultra Despair Girls, we're left with like these kids did horrible things, but if they have a reason to have started down that path, can we really put as much blame on them as we were going to, you know?
Right. Also, I mean, there's also the conversation of like their children, they're in development. So I, you know, they still have room to change and grow and hopefully with lots of therapy and assistance move past what has gone on, right. So we root for them because of that, because they are under 10, they're like literal children, whereas you know, these people are teenagers going into adulthood, because
yeah
for sure.
Whoo, baby,
deep talk.
Ooh, this is what I love about doing these podcasts.
Yeah. I know. Oh, me too. I do have another note about the brainwashing scene. And that is just like a little kind of like fun detail I decided to dig into a little bit more. I just couldn't help but notice. So when they're all becoming like hypnotized by despair and they're watching, you can see the spirals in their eyes. And I couldn't help but notice that the spirals in their eyes are counterclockwise spirals. So sometimes called left-hand spirals. And that was interesting to me because, so if you ask someone, like generally, at least like a right-handed person, to draw a spiral, they'll almost always default to drawing a clockwise spiral, like a right-handed spiral, because it just feels more natural. It's seen as more natural. That's just kind of like, and like the hand movement is more natural and it looks like better or whatever. But, and maybe that's part of the reason for this, but counterclockwise spirals are actually believed to be symbols of evil or to be like bad luck in many, many different cultures. Like in Celtic art, for instance, like a clockwise or right-handed spiral represents like the harmony of the cosmos or like the balance of like nature. But if you draw a counterclockwise or left-handed spiral in Celtic art, it represents the exact opposite. So it'd be like chaos or disharmony or like a rift in the space-time continuum. No, just like an imbalance in like nature and the spirit world or whatever that is like seen as almost like unhealthy. I don't know if it's the same in any kind of Japanese lore. I don't know the background of that. But I would be very interested to learn about that. If any of our listeners know, hit us up because I'd be very curious. I tried to do a little bit of Googling on it, but I couldn't really find anything. All that was coming up was like stuff about like calligraphy or kanji. Is that what it's called? The Japanese writing. And I was like, no, I'm looking for like the symbolic metaphor of like the spiral. Couldn't find anything. But if any of our listeners know, please do let me know. But yeah, I thought that was interesting. So I was like, oh, okay, they're being hypnotized into this horrible despair. Of course, they're going to have counterclockwise spirals in their eyes rather than clockwise, because it's just like something's a little bit off, you know?
I have a question about the brainwashing for both of you. Are they being brainwashed?
I have a note on this.
Please.
Actually. So it's interesting because I feel like there is a level of like, perhaps not, perhaps this is, you know, how that phenomenon in humanity where like when something so terrible is happening that you like literally cannot look away. Like there's that part where they're all like, we can't move, but it's like, I think they can. I think that they are just watching something that is so incredibly terrible and they feel so helpless that they can't do anything about it, that they can't help but see how it's going to play out.
Yes.
Right.
Yes. So, yes. Yeah. I literally, yes. I'm so glad you said that because it reminds me, there's an episode of Black Mirror called The National Anthem. It's season 1, episode 1.
Horrible episode.
Horrible episode. Horrible episode. Weird. But the theme of the episode is how people can't get off their phones and get off their TVs. And, you know, the just to give a general synopsis of the episode without getting too into the weird parts of it, I believe it's a princess or someone of that standing gets kidnapped. And the politician is told he has to either do something horrible and she'll be released, or he can refuse and she'll be killed. He's not a very well-liked guy. Like, he's trying to figure out what, like, if it's possible to not do this horrible thing. And it has to be filmed on national television, what he's going to do. And so he ends up choosing to do the horrible thing on national television. And what you find out is everyone's glued to their TVs watching him do this. And if anyone had looked outside their window for the hours beforehand that it was being televised during, they would know that she had already been released. Like, you could see her walking through the streets trying to find help. She's already out. But the people who were trying to force him to do this thing knew that no one could look away. And that, it's so, oh my gosh, I don't think they're brainwashed. I really don't. I think they are just so full of despair that they want to hurt other people the way that they've been hurt at the end.
Interesting. Yeah, so interesting.
I wanted to say, yeah, so I have also unfortunately seen that episode of Black Mirror. It in many ways is a very amazing show, but I always tell my friends who are thinking of watching it to skip the first episode and just not bother and maybe come back to it at some point if they're really curious. But I will just give a warning, listeners, if anyone is thinking about going and watching that, it is really, really horrible. It is absolutely disgusting, this first episode. I just wanted to give almost like a little bit of a content warning. If like any of our listeners are thinking of watching that, like, please, 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 like, tread with caution, because it actually is like really terrible. To answer your question, Marion, I never really thought of it like that. I guess I was just kind of in the anime suspension of disbelief mindset of like, oh, the magical powers of Ryota's anime brainwashing. Now they can't move, blah, blah, blah. But like, that's a really interesting point. And it also kind of reminds me of like hypnosis in a way and the power of suggestion, because hypnosis is not, so like in real life hypnosis, it is a thing. There is like, you know, you can go to a silly hypnotist show and see people like quack like ducks and do stuff like that. And you can go to a hypnotherapist who can help you with things. Hypnosis is a real thing, but it's not mind control. It's not like brainwashing. Nobody's going to like force you to do something against your will, because like hypnosis, in order for it to work and for you to really like experience kind of the power of suggestion of it. Like, for instance, let's say a hypnotherapist is trying to help you like stop smoking. The whole reason behind it is that it's the power of suggestion to help you kind of convince yourself that you no longer want to smoke. And it works with your own mind, because it's like you can't be hypnotized against your will, right? You have to be kind of cooperating along with it and convincing yourself of this, you know, power of suggestion and that this is real. And so if you don't think it's real, you can't be hypnotized. And so, yeah, maybe there is something to that in the sense of like, maybe this is not something that's really being forced on them against their will. Maybe it really is that kind of human instinct of, I can't look away, like, you know, morbid curiosity leading into something else. I don't know, but it's a good question.
Also, if Junko made this brainwashing video through Chiaki, right, Chiaki's death, why didn't she just show this video to the world and cause everyone to fall into despair? Why did the video that did not have Chiaki in it convince Chisa to become full of despair? Because it was full of her students, right, mm-hmm. doing horrible things.
Or well, she Mikan. Had a lobotomy.
True, that too. Yeah, but
I do not count, because there's physical brain manipulation going on there.
Yeah,
as then, unrealistic as that is, but yeah.
And then Mikan, you know, we talked a little bit about it. I think it was last episode, but about potentially why she was so easily suggestible, and mm-hmm. you know, her need to care for people. Maybe that was so full of despair that was all it took for her, and this is what it took for these specific students. Which means that it's not brainwashing, because brainwashing should in theory be able to affect all, right?
Right. Like,
so I don't think it is. I feel personalized very strongly about that.
But then there's that reels us back to what we were talking about earlier, about how, you know, the kids like then are guilty for what they did, because it is them. They're not completely erased. It's not their personalities are erased. Yeah, that's so interesting. Oh, and
60-40 on the kids.
Oh my god,
I'm sorry.
And they were so suggestible because the only person in their class who gave them hope that they could be something else other than what society was telling them they could be, Chiaki, it was proved to be a failure that she did that. So
just brutal. Ooh. A brutal scene.
Yeah, this is, I have a note that just says, I cannot, this is literally the worst thing I've ever had to watch forever. I like hate this so much. It like, I wouldn't have watched it if I wasn't already so invested in the series, but like, oh, this is not my favorite thing. I hated this episode. Yeah. And I was not looking forward to watching it today.
Yeah. It's just, there are specific times in Danganronpa where as a player, you feel the despair along with the characters. Like, I think a lot of times it's easier to disassociate, you know, it's like, it's sad that this is happening to these people, but this felt personal. Like this was just, I don't know, I had a really hard time watching this the first time through, and I remember I Marco Polo'd you guys and I was like crying, and I was like, you need to finish the anime. Like, yeah, it was just painful. And when she says like, there's so much that I still wanted to do, like I haven't done it, like just one more game, one more round, I could not handle that.
That was the moment that broke me, when she said exactly that I have that as my note, is like, that I was okay, like not okay, I was like horrified at what was going on, but I was like holding it together until she said that, and I was like, oh my god, you know, no, screw this. I'm gonna cry.
So I wanted to, I guess on this note, with the, you know, the impact of Chiaki and like the importance of her character, Maddie had said in an earlier episode that she didn't know how she felt about Chiaki being like a real person, you know.
Yeah,
like, I think that this scene makes it all worth it for me. This
I agree.
Is, right, this is the reason, because it's quite beautiful that they knew that she was enough to get these kids in the game back to who they were supposed to be, and that she was based on someone so real and in the memory of someone so real who did so much, even though she was so young.
I agree. I've changed my tune on that one. And I love what you said, Caroline, about her becoming more than what she was destined to be, just as like the ultimate gamer. She became so much more than that. And she does in the game as well. Like, you know, AI Chiaki also does the same thing. And it makes it, I think it makes it more meaningful. I originally thought that it took away a little bit of her impact in the second game, but I disagreed with that. Now I changed my mind. I think it adds to it. I think it makes it a lot more meaningful, her yeah. existence.
Yeah. And I think the image of Isaru crying, that is so powerful in and of itself. Like that yeah. proves exactly what you two were just saying. She is like the only person who could pull all of them, including Hajime, who is somewhere within this beautiful but dark man, right? Like that when he was crying, I was crying today when I watched this yesterday, but I started crying harder. Like, oh my gosh, this is too much.
It's also interesting if you think about, like, you know, he originally turned to the side of despair because he found despair to be unpredictable. And now he's finding that hope is also unpredictable.
Yeah.
Because there is loss in hope, which is, again, like we were saying earlier. And oh my God. So Nagito, in Nagito fashion, has a quote where he says, "In death, you become the stepping stone for hope." And in, you know, a lot of history and in a lot of like our everyday lives, you know, we look and learn about these martyrs, these people who have died for a cause or died and been, you know, very significant in their movement. But the hardest part is being the people who have to pass on that legacy. And this is a big connection between Kyoko and Makoto and Chiaki and then the rest of Hope's Peak. This is another big connection between these two episodes, as we have a martyr in both episodes where very important people who really impacted people and helped with the cause died. And then these, you know, Makoto and also those who, you know, hopefully the kids who survived the second game will go on and push forward, because living is so much harder to live with the reality of someone dying and living that truth and moving forward. Like, I can't help but think of like our Black queer people in this country who have died, and how we have to, you know, move on and fight for what they have died for. It's hard, but it's exhausting. Yeah, I'm resisting quoting Hamilton.
Bad. I literally was thinking that.
I don't want to quote Hamilton.
What is it? Dying is easy, young man. Living is harder. Is that the quote?
Yeah. Yes.
That's correct. Yeah. I don't have anything left emotionally and notes wise.
And financially.
Hey!
Amen. I don't either. So shall we move into our amended bedwed behead?
Let's do it. We shall.
All right, everybody. We are here with our amended bedwed behead. And today we are going to be doing Chiaki, Isaru, and Munakata. And we will be choosing between the three things that we will now repeat to you. I chose someone who you'd want to get drunk for the first time with.
Oh, for the first time with?
Yeah. It adds a little more stakes.
Mine is, who would you want to like crack your neck all crazy like the chiropractors do, where it seems like they're going to like rip your head off, but they don't?
All right. Mine is... you have to dress up as Anakin and Padme with them for a couple's costume contest. Or actually, I'll give you a choice. Anakin and Padme or Anna and Elsa. I need specification on which.
Oh, okay. So I would have Isaru crack my neck like a chiropractor, because, I mean, he supposedly is like, the idea of him is like he has like all the talents. Right, like all the talents in one person. So he's also the ultimate chiropractor. So I can trust him that he won't just break my neck, hopefully. I would get drunk for the first time with Chiaki, because she's so sweet and like would be a fun time, and we would play Birio Kart. Hello.
Heck yeah.
And I trust her, you know. And then that leaves me and Munakata to dress up, and I would in fact have us dress up as Anna and Elsa, and he would be Anna and I would be Elsa.
Maddie, it wouldn't be your first time dressing up as Elsa.
It's true. It would not be.
I can go next if you want, just because my answers are the exact same.
No
except,
way.
Except I would have Munakata dress as Anakin.
Ah.
Or maybe I'd make him dress as Padme. I don't know.
Cute.
We'll keep
cute.
We'll decide in the moment, but definitely Star Wars route.
Excellent.
All right. Well, I would have Chiaki crack my neck because I feel like, I don't know. I just feel like she'd be really calming. Kind of like what Maddie said. Like, I feel like out of all these experiences, that is the freakiest for me. And so, yeah, I would want her there for that.
It is freaky.
It's true. I would get drunk with Minakata because I feel like I just want to get him to loosen up and like have some fun, you know, and just like let loose a little. So, you know, I'd help him out with that. Mm-hmm. And we'd get drunk together. And then I would have Izuru dress up as Elsa because he is the epitome of the cold never bothered me anyway.
That's true.
So yeah, we would be, he'd be Elsa, I'd be Anna. Obviously I'm such an Anna.
Love it.
All right, everybody. Thank you so much for tuning in to this episode of Ultra Hope Girls, a Danganronpa podcast. We're so glad you listened in today. Make sure you follow us on Facebook, on Twitter, on Instagram. We're Ultra Hope Girls Podcast pretty much everywhere. And you'll get updates on all the episodes that are coming your way. So definitely check us out there. We also have a Patreon. The lowest tier is just $2 a month. And anything you're able to give is always greatly appreciated. We have bonus episodes on there that are definitely worth checking out. Some of them are really awesome. Maddie did one on brainwashing. So yeah.
Not or amnesia per se.
Yeah, Maddie did one.
Amnesia, yes, which I do touch on, I think, a little bit
in that. Yeah, but there's an episode related to that in there. Yeah, y'all. And if you want to have your question featured at the end of our season, we're getting there. So the clock's ticking. If you want a question in here, leave us a voicemail at anchor.fm. We love hearing your questions and your opinions. Please let us know if you have any thoughts that you'd like to share with us. And that's it, everybody. Have a great day, and we'll see you next time. Bye.
Bye.